Hello and welcome to a conversation about fear, power, and the stories we tell when times get hard. Close your eyes and picture a European village 400 years ago. Late winter, frozen fields, empty larders, a cow falls ill, a child's fever won't break, the bread doesn't rise. The village needs a reason. Whispers collect at the doorstep of a woman who lives alone. We imagine witch hunts as panics about magic. Pull back the curtain, and you see us. Our rules, our tower structures, our anxieties, aiming blame at people who didn't fit the mold. Across Europe, about 4 out of 5 people accused of witchcraft were women, many over 40. That's not random. It maps onto a world where being female, older, widowed, or independent could paint a target on your back. Why then? Because the ground was shifting. Economies were changing. The Reformation was reshaping family and community. Work was reorganized to favor men's labor. And the climate turned hostile. The Little Ice Age brought brutal winters and failed harvests. When there isn't enough bread, even a shared table can start to feel like a battlefield. In that tension, a woman who didn't fit expectations became a lightning rod. Widows were especially vulnerable. A widow might inherit a third of her husband's property, enough to make her independent. In a fair society, independence is a virtue. In a fearful one, it looks like a threat. A woman making choices outside a husband's or father's authority rattled the hierarchy, and some men in power acted. Let's get concrete. In places like Augsburg, Germany, historians found property disputes often preceded witchcraft accusations, roughly 2 out of 5 times in one study. Imagine arguing with a neighbor over a fence or a loan. Then a storm flattens your grain. If the village already sees that neighbor as a difficult widow or an unmarried woman who doesn't know her place, misfortune can turn into a story about curses rather than climate. The numbers tell a human story. Across tens of thousands of trial records in the German lands, most defendants were women, a big portion past childbearing age. In a patriarchal world that valued women mainly as wives and mothers, aging out of those roles thinned your social shield. In good times, your skills as a midwife, an herbalist, a caretaker made you indispensable. In bad times, the same knowledge became proof of secret powers. Accusations weren't random blasts of panic. They followed a pattern, like a tragic 3-act play. Act 1, crisis, a bad harvest, an epidemic, a run of accidents. Act 2, accusation. Rumors find an outsider, or someone on the edge of belonging. Act 3, collective release. Punishing the accused creates the illusion of control. People feel safer, even if nothing changes. This scapegoat script is ancient, but in early modern Europe, it ran through institutions. It wasn't just gossip over fences. Authorities questioned, recorded, prosecuted. They turned whispers into confessions and verdicts. When the people in charge believed the story or found it useful, rumor became reality. Useful how? Power and property. Where land was concentrated, removing a woman who wouldn't comply could serve multiple goals. Accuse the stubborn widow. Suddenly her house, her field, her stall are up for grabs. Denounce the successful brewer working without a husband. Competition disappears. Brutal calculus, dressed up as moral certainty. Consider a late case, Anna Goldie in Switzerland, often called the last witch executed in Europe in the late 1700s. On the surface, a household scandal. She was a domestic servant accused by her employer's family. Underneath, desire, reputation, inheritance. Who controls the household? Who gets to speak without fear? Who gets believed? Witch hunts weren't just folklore. They reached into kitchens, courts, and city squares, wherever status and suspicion met. I want to pause and invite you to think about who in your world sits at the edge of belonging. A colleague who doesn't follow unspoken rules. A neighbor who lives alone. A person whose expertise people suddenly question when pressure rises. That's the echo. The past is a mirror. Back to our village. Picture a midwife who's delivered babies for decades. Herbs hang from her rafters. Not danger, but knowledge. Then a newborn dies. A tragedy far too common in any century. In grief, the village reaches for certainty, not statistics. Hope becomes blame. The line between healer and witch is drawn not by evidence, but by fear. For older women, risks piled up. More likely to be alone. Less likely to have sons or husbands to defend them. More likely to have property others coveted. In a society that treated women's bodies and labor as resources to be managed by men, stepping outside that management, through widowhood, age, or independence, made you visible in all the wrong ways. And yet it's too simple to say this was only misogyny, as powerful as that was. It was also about how communities make sense of chaos. When weather wrecks your harvest or illness sweeps through, your brain craves a storyline. Blame becomes a currency. It buys the feeling of control. If I can point to a culprit, I don't have to face the wildness of the world. But storylines don't emerge in a vacuum. They're written by whoever holds the pen. Landowners, clergy, magistrates, people with incentives to protect their place. If a woman's autonomy rattled the hierarchy, or if an accusation could settle an awkward dispute, the machinery of justice could be set in motion. Official sermons might condemn superstition. Social realities often shouted louder. You can feel how this reverberates now. We don't burn witches today, but we still run on rumor when pressure's high. We still isolate the easiest target. We still let institutions harden suspicion into punishment. A moral panic online. A whisper campaign at work. A policy that punishes vulnerability while calling it protection. Old script, new stage. So what do we take from this? First, the numbers matter, not as the last word, but as signposts. Again and again, accusations landed on women, especially older women and widows. Second, the why is as much about bread and land as belief. Fear takes aim where power points. Third, scapegoating works, briefly. It knits a frayed community together for a moment, then leaves it morally poorer and no safer. If this sparks curiosity, the article behind this episode goes deeper into economic shifts, climate stress, and how legal systems amplified suspicion, with names, dates, and sources to explore. I'll leave you with one last image. The snow begins to melt. The river breaks its ice. Fields breathe again. The crisis shifts, as crises do. But the woman at the center of all that fear is gone. The bread returns. The cows recover. And people say, "See? It worked." History tells us it was never true. Our task now is to notice when tidy stories ask us to trade someone else's safety for our sense of certainty, and to refuse the bargain. Because once you see how witch hunts worked, you can't unsee the pattern. And once you name the pattern, you can choose a different ending.